say why. Why the perfect murder?
Oh, all right. It can't be detected. That's what he said. It leaves no trace at all, just dissolves into the blood.
And what did your son say to you, Mrs. Marshall?
He said, I know Alice has tried to poison me.
He opened the door and found himself in the hands of two murderous brutes. Then he was dragged back into the parlour and this time murdered.
Murder Most Foul. Six forensic murder cases presented by Nick Ross. Case 5, Murder on the Farm.
Oh, God.
Close the door, Mother. Please.
What is it?
What a stupid little wife to try to poison me.
Let's call the stupid little wife in question Alice Jameson. In fact, we've changed several identities and even place names to protect the privacy of families involved. Alice was, in fact, by no means stupid. She was a member of Mensa. Born in 1951, her parents had emigrated with her from England to Australia when she was 3. When she was 12, she first met Stephen Jameson, a young farmer, also newly arrived from Britain. And by the age of 16, she was pregnant by him. They married, they had another child, and then Stephen took his young wife with him back to his father's farm near Bath. Early one summer morning in 1974, Alice waited outside her cottage for her brother-in-law to come by.
Alex! Alex!
Morning, Alice.
Stephen can't come to work this morning.
What?
Why not? Can't afford for him not to.
Well, he's not well. He's not well at all. He's been being sick and he's got diarrhea as well, and a sore throat.
How's he gonna get that then?
I think it may have been some weed killer in his food.
What? You're not serious.
Well, Davina had been playing with it in the bathroom.
Playing with it?
Well, I didn't know. I just found her with it. So I took it and poured it down the sink. But maybe... well, maybe some of it splashed. I don't know.
Weed killer? What?
Morning, Alex. Alice.
I've been a bit sick myself as well.
Hello, Dad.
Morning, Mr. Jameson. Stephen's not very well. You haven't got some aspirin, have you?
Well, yeah, I've got some back at the house.
So we thought we ought to call you.
Yes, quite right.
Come in, Doctor.
Hello there, Mr. Jameson. Sickness and diarrhea, your wife says.
Yes, Doctor. I think it was something I ate. Something in the stew last night.
Oh, well, that's not good enough, is it? That's the sort of thing you can get a divorce for. Let's have a look at you.
There was some paraquat.
Sorry?
Paraquat. Weed killer. In the house. One of the children got hold of it yesterday. Brought it in the house.
Oh, did you touch it?
No, I didn't touch it.
Oh, well, then, we should be able to forget that. Oh, that's a nasty throat you've got there. Now, Mrs. Jameson, if you could fetch this for your husband...
Dad'll take you to the chemist.
Right.
And let me know if he doesn't do the trick.
Yes, Doctor.
It didn't do the trick. Stephen Jameson's tongue turned red, and within 2 days he could hardly talk. On July the 6th, 2 days after he'd eaten the stew, he was on his way to hospital.
I'll take Stephen. Thanks, Alice. You go with Grandpa.
All right.
You comfortable?
No.
You'll be fine when we get there, you'll see.
I can't understand it.
Was I?
How it got in the house. The paraquat. I've always kept it in the shed.
Well...
keep an eye on her for me, will you?
Alice?
She's due to take her driving test. If she passes... I think she might take the children away.
Surely.
So you look after the arrangements, would you?
Of course.
Oh, and there's some letters from the accountants in Australia. Get them out the house for me. I can't rely on her to deal with large sums of money.
All right, Stephen.
As Mr. Jameson was to say later, it was as though Stephen was suddenly a small boy again, knowing like a child that his life at this point was entirely controlled by others. Stephen's mouth by now was raw and bleeding, while the poison set about attacking his internal organs too. When it was confirmed that he was indeed suffering from paraquat poisoning, he was immediately transferred to Bristol Royal Infirmary. Dr. Thompson, a physician there, was a recognised expert on poisons administered to the human body.
So she says she may have spilt some in the stew?
Yes. We'd been talking about a case. It was in the papers. About a woman who'd put paraquat in her husband's tea. He died.
Ah.
She read it. We talked. How am I then, Doctor?
Well, you're very sick. We'll see. I think I've tired you enough for the moment, though. You should get some rest.
How is he then, Doctor?
Tell us, please.
Your son is very ill. I'm afraid there's no way his life can be saved.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry. When you see him, both of you, please try to be as calm as possible. Just talk about everyday things.
Dr. Thompson was concerned enough to contact the police. When they'd heard what the doctor had to say, they assigned Detective Inspector Andrew Simmons to the case.
And there's definitely no hope?
No. Apart from the burning of his mouth and throat, the paraquat's present in his urine. His kidneys and lungs are damaged beyond repair, and it's attacking other organs. It's hard to say exactly how much of the stuff he consumed, and it is the concentrated weed killer, for farm use, not the household variety. But I certainly think it is possible it wasn't an accident.
I see.
And then, when I told her he was going to die, there was almost no reaction. Virtually nothing. Well, I've had to do this sort of thing before, tell people that sort of news. I've never seen so little reaction to news of that sort.
Different people react in different ways.
No, she was... I don't quite know how to describe it. She was remote.
Detective Inspector Simmons spoke to Stephen Jameson, who then made a statement stating the events of the night of the poisoning. A search was made of the Jamesons' house. There was the newspaper report of the previous paraquat murder, just lying there on top of a pile of papers. There'd been no attempt to hide it. The detective also found two unaddressed letters, one headed Dear Mark, the other Dear Joe. Meanwhile, Stephen Jameson's mother had been contacted. Now remarried, she was Mrs. Betty Marshall and lived in Middlesex. She received a telegram and was then told over the phone that her son had only 48 hours to live. She travelled straight to Bristol.
Yes, Davina had been playing with it, so I took it away from her to get rid of it. I was pouring it down the sink, but Davina was there. You know, it distracts you. And I may have... well, sprinkled some of it in the stew.
I see.
I ate a little bit of it too, and I was sick. We both were. We were sick together and laughing at each other.
You can come in now, Mrs. Marshall. Oh,
thank you.
Please try not to show that you're upset.
Right.
And I've been asked to say, please don't mention anything connected to the illness.
All right.
Your mother's here to see you, Mr. Jameson.
Hello, Mother.
Hello, Stephen. Oh, God.
Close the door, Mother. Please.
What is it?
What a stupid little wife to try to poison me. You're looking well.
And you're... they're looking after you all right, then?
Oh, wonderful. Mother, I must tell you. Something happened before all this.
What do you mean?
A cup of coffee. One day she made me a cup of coffee, Alice.
Oh, you shouldn't.
I want to tell you, she went out to the kitchen to make coffee. She came back in with the cup. I think she may have put something in it. She brought it, put it down. I spilt it. I made sure I spilt it.
Oh, Stephen, you must be imagining things.
She put something in it.
On the day before he died, Stephen Jameson asked for a personal word with Dr. Thompson. He'd been given morphine to ease the pain, and to make sure that the patient's mind was clear, Dr. Thompson first made small talk. They chatted about the Lions rugby match in South Africa the previous day. Stephen Jameson knew all the details, who had scored and how the different players had contributed to the match. Only then did they move on to other matters.
She wasn't much of a mother.
No?
She wasn't good with the children. Didn't keep the house tidy. She had an affair.
When was that?
In Australia. And she had to go to hospital. She took an overdose. It was just to draw attention to herself.
But, Stephen, what about the paraquat? How did it get into the house?
I don't know. I kept it in a tea chest.
In the shed. Michael, the older one, he's too well disciplined. He wouldn't have got it. He knew there were dangerous things in there. And Davina, she's only two. Physically, she couldn't lean over the chest and fish it out. So that means... What should I do, Doctor?
I think you should talk to your brothers about it.
Yes. I'll talk to my brothers.
But he never had the chance. On July the 15th, 1974, after 11 days of excruciating pain, Stephen Jameson died with his father at his bedside. When his wife was told the news, she became utterly distraught, even threatening to commit suicide. Indeed, she was seen by a psychiatrist and admitted to hospital. Nonetheless, next day, she was interviewed by Inspector Simmons.
Just tell me what happened. Start at the beginning. There's no rush.
Yes. Well, that afternoon I was clearing things out from under the stairs. I was going to burn a lot of the old cardboard, but I also went down to the woodshed to see if there was any space.
To put other things from under the stairs?
Yes. And then at the same time I was cooking dinner for Stephen. A stew.
What exactly went into that?
Oh, well, it would have been a pound of beefsteak, half a pound of onions, 2 tablespoons of vinegar, a tomato sauce, half a pint of water, and a pinch of rosemary, seasoning. I just sprinkled the rosemary on the top, but there was too much of it. It was getting on for about 3 p.m. by then. I went back to the woodshed to get the container.
Just to make room in the shed?
No. No, I thought I'd use it as a watering can.
I see.
Well, it was sticky and dirty, I think with diesel oil. I didn't notice any label. And as far as I know, it had a blue cap. I didn't know what was in it. As I walked back into the house, I emptied part of it onto a strip of the grass on the right-hand side, about halfway.
So it was you that brought the container into the house?
Yes. I carried it into the kitchen and began to empty it into the left-hand side of the sink. At this time, the casserole was on the left-hand draining board, waiting for the oven to heat. As I was pouring, someone brought Davina into the house. I think they dropped her off with the tractor. I think it was one of the men. When she came in, I couldn't see her. She was on the other side of the fridge. I bent forward and to my left in order to see round the fridge, and while I was doing that, I carried on pouring from the container. I was able to see Davina round the fridge, and as soon as I saw her, I realized she'd dirtied her pants. I was cross. I assume I shook the container to empty it and threw it on top of the dirty washing. I turned towards the oven.
Which way?
Oh, 180 degrees, to my right. And I opened both the oven doors. They were hot, and I held them with a cloth with my left hand and banged the casserole dish into the oven. It had no lid.
So now Mrs. Jameson had given two versions of events. The first, in which she'd discovered Davina playing with the paraquat in the bathroom. The second, in which she'd brought the container into the house herself. Detective Inspector Simmons' interview with her lasted almost 4.5 hours.
No, please, just tell me again.
All right. The children were still awake, and I think he went up to them. I put the meal on the table, including the casserole. I boiled some new potatoes from the garden, which Stephen eats with their skins on. He helped himself to about 3/4 of the meal and potatoes and ate them while I was making a pot of tea.
And what did he think of the food?
Well, he commented, rather than complained, that there was too much rosemary and vinegar in the casserole. As he was finishing his meal, I sat down.
And so he was with you as you had some of the stew?
He got up and had a wash. I tasted the meal. It was dreadful. I didn't eat more than a mouthful. I had 6 potatoes about 8 p.m. You don't really need to. I know what I said.
It's very important, Mrs. Jameson, that I read it back to you, so that we're both agreed. He got up and had a wash. I tasted the meal. It was dreadful. I didn't eat more than a mouthful. I had 6 potatoes at 8 p.m.
Hold on. I may have spat it out.
You may have spat it out?
Yes.
All right. I'll add that then, Mrs. Jameson.
The case for arresting Alice Jameson on suspicion of murdering her husband was gaining strength. Simmons went on to ask Mrs. Jameson about the letters to Dear Joe and Dear Mark. Meanwhile, Stephen Jameson's one sister, his twin, Jane, was casting her mind back to another letter.
That was delicious. Thank you, my love. Jane?
Oh, sorry, Norman. I was just thinking.
About Stephen?
Do you remember last year, Stephen giving you a letter to pass on to me?
Yes. Yes, I do.
You never read it, did you?
Well, I didn't think you wanted me to. And Stephen certainly didn't suggest it.
No, well, when I'd read it, I tried to give it back to him, but he wouldn't take it. He said he didn't want it. He said I should keep it. So I have done. Here it is. Can I read you some of it?
Go on.
All right. Alice wrote it. It's called Essay on My Life. It's dated 5th February last year, and it seems to be to someone called Joe. I've never heard of him. She also mentions Mark somewhere. He's that homosexual friend of hers in Australia.
Oh, yes, right.
So, she says here, I am selfish, but I feel I have been through enough already and deserve something more. I am moderately attractive and moderately intelligent.
So why should I bury myself in a strange house in a strange country without any hope of fulfilling my hopes? I'm not a nice person, and I'm tired of pretending I am. I'm hard-hearted and calculating and extrovert, needing my freedom, independence, and outside interests. I always strive to take the easiest way in everything. Although I try, I cannot get emotionally involved in anything I do or in people I meet. I think this explains my attitude towards sex. Although I enjoy it, afterwards I feel wanton and disgusted with myself. I don't have the courage to let myself become emotionally involved with anything. This is a psychological block built up through years of emotional torment. And my children, I love them dearly, yet I hate them because they tie me down to a situation I don't like. If the love is continually blocked out, only hate remains. I don't have the strength of character to change. At times, I believe I'm not really human. That's not good for anyone.
Jane gave the essay to Alex, who, when he read it, had no hesitation in passing it on to the police. A clearer picture of Mrs. Jameson's state of mind was beginning to emerge, perhaps, too, of her motives. Yet, despite her view of herself and her position, despite the changes she'd made to her story, it would still be hard to prove beyond all reasonable doubt that the poisoning had been deliberate. Two new experts were now brought in, Dr. Keith Fletcher, research manager at ICI's Central Toxicology Unit, and Dr. Fish of the University of Strathclyde. D.I. Simmons brought them up to date.
So, that's it, gentlemen. And finally, the forensic department from Glasgow found tiny spots of paraquat remaining in the casserole, as you might expect. They also found minute splashes on the cooker and other items in the kitchen.
Which is consistent with her story.
As far as it goes, yes.
Minute splashes. Though, of course, the surfaces would have been washed.
Yes.
Now, the post-mortem results show that the victim probably ingested about 30 to 50 millilitres of paraquat. That's about 5 to 10 teaspoonfuls.
Yes.
And it's meant to have just splashed in. Well, then, what we have to do is repeat exactly what Mrs. Jameson says she did, using the same size casserole next to the same sort of sink. Then we'd see just how much would be splashed.
Alice Jameson, you are charged that you did on July the 4th, 1974, in the house occupied by your husband, Stephen Charles Jameson, administer poison to him by placing a liquid containing paraquat in food which he there and then consumed, and in consequence thereof he died on July the 15th, 1974, at the Bristol Royal Infirmary, and that you did murder him. How do you plead?
Not guilty.
I shall now read out a statement made by the deceased as he lay in bed on July the 10th in the Bristol Royal Infirmary.
The case for the Crown was conducted by Ronald Sandell, QC. William Davy, another silk, carried out the case for the defence. One of the first witnesses for the prosecution was Stephen Jameson's father.
After a while, it looked as if they were getting on well, but not as well as I would have liked.
Thank you, Mr. Jameson. Now, could you tell me, is it correct that you received a rather long letter from Alice last year, and this made reference to the fact that if anything happened to Stephen, all assets must go to the children?
Yes. She didn't write this to other members of the family, only to me.
Hmm. Did you discuss this with others in the family?
No, I never mentioned it. But it did upset me. I received it, well, 3 or 4 months before Stephen died.
Thank you, Mr. Jameson. And what did your son say to you, Mrs. Marshall?
He said, "I know Alice has tried to poison me."
And why had this not been noted by the police at the time of your statement to them?
I don't know, but it sticks very clear in my memory. That was the morning of the day he died.
Thank you, Mrs. Marshall.
Mrs. Marshall, is it correct that Alice told you that the Jameson family were not kind to her, and that when they did call at the house, they appeared to ignore her altogether?
Yes, but at no time when I was with her did Alice appear to be upset.
Things already looked bad for Alice Jameson. Extracts from her essay on myself were read out, along with letters in which she said how very hard she found it to live apart from her friend Mark. She said she didn't believe in this world anymore. And then, addressing Mark, she added that she had a plan up her sleeve, but she didn't say what. All this was before the doctors and scientists had begun. Dr. Thompson took the stand and told of his early suspicions of all that Stephen Jameson had told him in their private talk, and of Mrs. Jameson's absence of reaction when informed of her husband's pending death. He was then asked more about the night the poisoning took place.
I was called out the day after he had ingested the paraquat, and at the time he already had a very sore mouth and throat.
And did you examine the accused?
No, I didn't. But if she had consumed any of the stew, I would have expected her to complain of mouth-burning symptoms or ulceration of the mouth as her husband had.
Now tell us, Doctor, what is a fatal dose of paraquat?
I would say that 1 teaspoonful or 5 millilitres is possibly a fatal dose. Paraquat is heat-resistant and not likely to be blown off in the steam content, but would remain in the stew and gravy. The amount of paraquat in the liver, muscles, kidney and other parts reveal that 6 to 10 teaspoonfuls were consumed. It might have been 5.5 teaspoonfuls, but no less. And if he only had half the amount of stew prepared, he would only have that amount of paraquat in his body.
And Dr. Nugent, as registrar at the Bristol Royal Infirmary, you had occasion to speak to Mr. Jameson?
Yes. He told me about the paraquat having been spilled, and then he said, "I suppose it might have been put in deliberately, but she hasn't got the guts." Those were his actual words.
Dr. Fletcher, you say that 10 cc is about the average lethal dose.
Yes, it depends how much paraquat is actually swallowed. I've watered down paraquat and tasted it.
Have you, Doctor?
Yes, it has a very unpleasant taste, but it would be quite easy to disguise.
With rosemary?
I'm not familiar with rosemary, but it can be disguised by adding spice.
Thank you, Dr. Fletcher. So, Dr. Fish, this sink we have constructed here in the dock is identical to the one in Mrs. Jameson's kitchen?
Yes.
Now, could you tell us about the experiments you conducted?
You may come down in order to show us.
Thank you, my lord. Well, we did exactly as Mrs. Jameson says she did, in exactly the way she describes, many times over.
And what did you find?
We found that a litre of gramoxone...
The particular type of paraquat?
Yes. Hmm. 1 litre had to be poured into the sink 250 times in order to get 1 teaspoonful splashed into the casserole or onto the draining board.
But we heard yesterday that Mrs. Jameson was distracted. She wasn't looking at what she was doing.
That's right. So we tried that. When the paraquat was poured more recklessly, about 5 teaspoonfuls could get into the casserole. But there would also be obvious amounts of the liquid on the draining board, down the side, and on the floor.
From this point on, there was little the defence could do. Indeed, only one defence witness was produced, and that was the accused herself. In fact, she had answers to most things. She explained her two versions of how the weed killer had got into the house. At first, she said, she'd been trying to avoid once again being blamed for something by the family, and then, having begun with the lie, she'd had to keep it up for some time. Like Dr. Fish, she was asked to demonstrate at the sink in the courtroom exactly what she said had happened on the night of the poisoning. She splashed a lot of liquid. She said that the only plan that she'd had up her sleeve had been a possible trip to Ireland. She did admit she'd been terribly unhappy as a farmer's wife in England. At times, she became upset. She protested that her husband had told her he knew she was innocent. But in his summing up, the judge implied fairly clearly his own views of her plea.
You may even feel sorry for the accused, but I admonish you to put out of your mind any feeling of sympathy, partiality, or prejudice on one side or the other. There can be no doubt that Stephen Jameson was poisoned by the stew he ate on July the 4th. It is clear from his dying statement that in those 12 days he was puzzled as to how the paraquat got into the house, doubted the accused's story, and had his suspicions it might have been administered deliberately.
On January the 10th, Alice Jameson, a woman who saw herself as buried in a strange house in a strange country, began her life sentence for the murder of her husband.
In Murder on the Farm, Moya O'Shea played Alice Jameson and David Lerner played Stephen Jameson. Other parts were played by Keith Drinkle, Peter Penry-Jones, Anne Windsor, Ronald Herdman, John Church, Brett Usher, John Webb, Kate Binchy, Eric Allen, Jonathan Adams, and Melanie Hudson. Murder Most Foul was written by Rib Davis and presented by Nick Ross. The producer was Fiona MacLean.